voices being heard, or will they? On the player side, they took to Twitter to try and get their voices across to the league. We will wait and see what that response looks like. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. Mike Golic Jr. with you guys here. And
10 days.
It is an interesting thing. As to 10 days here, but we're trying to see if we can get something resolved. Hopefully by the time we finish here, we will have the things and issues resolved between the NFL and the NFLPA. How's that for a goal?
We should, because it's supposed to be next Tuesday. The show and my run on radio will end next Friday. So by Tuesday, we were supposed to have all the veterans report. Rookies report today for the Texans and for the Chiefs, since they play that first game September 10th. And the veterans report July 28th, next Tuesday. So I personally still think it's going to happen. There's a lot supposedly they're talking about. I think there's a couple of main issues that they need to get by. And the players, unlike in the spring when they took to Twitter and it was a disagreement, a butting of heads of some of the bigger time players and the new CBA and how the CBA was going to help more of the mainstream guys, I didn't think that was a good look. This one, they've been on almost daily calls with their union reps. And a lot of the tweets, they said the union wanted to make sure they were factually correct. This was a very well-coordinated, attack is the wrong word, representation of what players are looking for before they want to report and start this season.
If you're dealing with something that is powerful but sort of lumbering, the NFL is very powerful. The owners have a ton of time, money, experience, all those things that always make negotiating with them tough, but they're never very nimble. Doing things fast isn't the NFL's forte. And so if you're the players, you saw when Patrick Mahomes and that group of players put out a video asking the commissioner to say that Black Lives Matter and to support their cause, because they were able to do it quickly and in a way that the NFL's not used to responding to, time that with all the leverage they had, you got more results quicker than we ever could have imagined. I'm sure the players look at that and say, all right, well, we saw power in our big-time players' voices in the spring when it came to that. Power in using Twitter and being nimble this summer. Well, let's put all those things together now as the Players Association and try and see if we can't cross the finish line with a few more things in our hand than in their hand in a lot of this. And that makes sense now. Our own ESPN NFL reporter Jeremy Fowler was on SportsCenter last night talking about where this goes and what happens next for the NFLPA.
It all works around a potential grievance filed from the NFLPA over unsafe working conditions. If they go that route, if rookies show up this week and they feel like there are too many positive tests or the situation is not ideal for those young players in the Houston Texans camp, Kansas City Chiefs, wherever, then the PA could file this grievance and then things sort of shut down. It buys some veteran players some time because they don't have to report until around July 28th. So it would expedite the negotiation. That would be the goal from the player side because they feel like the NFL is sort of running the clock out on them here, just trying to get to the very last minute before they have to do anything. So if during that grievance they can't work out some of their issues, that's when maybe players would say, look, we're just not going to show up for now. Go on a mini strike. And then you have not only the preseason at stake, but week one of the regular season.
So it is interesting. These rookies who are reporting today are kind of being used as the barometer.
I think is pretty messed up the more I hear about it.
It is kind of interesting.
They are dues-paying union members. Yeah, they're a part of this league, and yet they're being asked to go out there in a way that the other players, just because of tenure, don't want to deal with. It's not really something that I feels defensible if you're the Players Association.
It is somewhat interesting that that's what's happening. You know, the veterans are going to see how kind of this week runs. And not the only thing, but they're going to see how it works because we finally are seeing practical application. There are actual football players at facilities now. How are they being tested? We know there's going to be the protocol of how they get their food. It'll be in containers. And I mean, they have all, it's not like they haven't done anything. There have been some things and some lists and some priorities taken care of already.
Yeah. When the players show up to this, just an example, and Dan Graziano has done a great job for us reporting on a lot of this stuff and getting information from a lot of these calls. When the players show up for training camps, it sounds like they're going to show up, check in, test, go home that day, come back the next day, just test and leave. And then finally, after you've gone through two rounds of testing to make sure that there's no false positives or false negatives, because we've seen that happen in the NBA already, that once you get past that, then on the third day, things would actually start to happen. So we've heard some coaches don't even expect to see their players in the first couple of days when they report. So, and we hear this cry a lot. how have they been, you know, not done anything in the time leading up to this? Things have been done.
They have, yes.
But it's like anything else. There becomes these core issues that both sides are unwilling to budge on. It seems that centers around testing,
right,
daily versus every other day, daily that the NFLPA wants, and every other day like the NFL wants in this, and then the preseason games.
Right. So, again, the testing, if there are 90 people that are going to show up, because there was talk of only having a 75-man roster, but understand you start with 90 players. You throw coaches in there and all the other staff around. I conservatively put it at like 120 per team times 32 is probably a hair under 4,000. So just say 4,000. You would be looking at basically 4,000, and they would have to be rapid tests per day. And I don't know the feasibility of that. Certainly from a money standpoint, there's no doubt the NFL could do it. That's not the issue. Money is never an issue there. It's going to be the practicality of, can you do that all rapid response and then find out hopefully 15, 20 minutes later, how quick can everybody be tested? Because then you have meetings, workouts, practice that you're eventually going to have to get into. So that's why the league is saying maybe every third day so we can all function in a certain way. That part I have no idea about. We'll try at time to get doctors on to talk about things like that. The other is, well, I think the big issue, and it revolves around the preseason games for people to understand, is the own medical panel that the sides agreed upon, basically, or at least from the NFL side, has had a 48-day ramp up to the first game. And that ramp up, so if you show up next Tuesday, July 28th, and then the first game is September 10th, I think, on a Thursday, that's 44 days. That's just for one game. That first Sunday, the regular season, that's going to be 47 days. So right around the 48 days, ramp up to the first play. Well, the league is trying to say ramp up but include two preseason games, and the players are saying, no, we need to ramp up slowly, get there, work out without pads before we even get to pads, before we even get to the right practice, and then forget the preseason game and go right to the game. So that's a big sticky point. One, I think they can overcome.
Well, I was going to say, so going through this, because we heard from a lot of the high-profile players, and that's important in the getting stuff done department.
Yes.
As far as the effect on everybody in this situation, there are going to be guys that are going to go through this and say, well, listen, I can't afford to be getting fined out here, because that's right. Part of the new CBA is if these players don't show up, they're facing fines. I can't afford the fines. I need to go out there and be earning a paycheck and all this. And so when you look at it from that perspective, which is the perspective that you held in that league for 9 years, what are the things that you look at on here and say, you know what, as a player, this is what I would absolutely need versus, you know what, this is something that I can say, if we get close to this or if we have to come down a little bit, I can live with it.
I can start out with the structure of testing every day, but I really need to know how that looks, because you're testing to start out 90 players, then 75 players, then 53 players. Do you test them all at once? Or are you getting results back in different part of the days where then people can't be together until they get the results back? I would need no more, and I don't, because I'm not on these phone calls, of just how it would work to test every single day. Because, again, players are going home and then their communities and then coming to the facilities. So I would need to know that, and I would like it every day, see the feasibility of it. I would play one preseason game. I could certainly see one preseason game getting in there and actually getting, you know, I know the latest CBA has less two padded practices, no actual consecutive days of pads in practice. I get it, you know, especially the veteran players, they don't have to do it as much. I needed a little bit more. I needed to kind of knock around a little bit. I needed to hit some and do that. Even as I was getting older, a little bit to shake off the rust. I didn't mind a preseason game. And again, when you had four, a lot of times the starters didn't play in many. But if you have one, there was something to play, not against your own guy, playing against a different guy, kind of getting those juices flowing a little bit. I think, to me, it's very difficult to play such a physical sport and basically just practice amongst your teammates. And I'll go, like they do, quite honestly, how they do in college a lot of times, and then go right into playing another opponent. I always like to get a preseason game in or so.
Golic and Wingo is brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant for ultimate protection and shine in no time. And I think that was where I fell on it, is you're probably going to have to give the NFL one preseason game
right.
In a lot of this. And I even saw some other people commenting online that, you know, the ramp up period, because the structure of it's what matters to players. Yes. They want X amount of days just working out before, then X amount of days with no padded walkthroughs, and then finally ramping it up to, I think it was 14 padded practices leading into the resumption of activity. I have a feeling there's going to be some ways that they can find wiggle room in that to make people feel better. The one preseason game feels like a concession, because when it comes to the health and safety of all this daily testing for a league that's not like the NBA, where once you get through that wave, you're all going to be in there in that bubble. You're going to go home and everyone's going to go
home.
This
is like baseball.
All of the staff every day and be exposed to something potentially out there. And there's much more contact than in baseball. We know that.
Yes,
there's inherently greater risk for all of these guys in that. So we'll get back to that in a little bit, including one issue that you brought up that no other league has addressed, and yet the NFL players still want answers to, despite not a lot of proof of concept on that one. But we did have sports continue to return last night. Major League Baseball was back on our screens. We had Mets-Yankees last night, Cubs-White Sox all playing last night, and it felt good. And if it felt good for us, then I have a feeling for our next guest, it felt even better. We are joined now by former longtime major leaguer, current ESPN baseball analyst, Chipper Jones. Chipper, thank you for the time this morning. How good did that feel last night, man? It had to be amazing.
Oh, man, it was just great to experience Major League Baseball again. I know we've had a little bit of KBO on ESPN. Boo's been doing some of the games from the Korean Baseball Org, but and to actually see Major League pitchers and hitters out there on the field, it was a welcome sight.
So, Chipper, along the lines of it just ramping up now and playing these games before we get to the July 23rd and the first real game, what in your mind will be the thing that may take the longest to come back for a player?
Well, speaking as a position player and a hitter, obviously when you go 3 or 4 months without seeing 95 to 100 miles an hour, the game is really fast. It takes a while for you to get used to the speed of the game again. That's why it takes, you know, there's 6-7 weeks of spring training to ramp things up. These guys have 2.5-3 weeks now after taking 3 months off, having to ramp up, and in some cases, you know, a shorter time. If you're talking about, say, a Freddie Freeman or a Yoan Moncada, who have been out with the virus for a little, only have a few days left to really ramp it up. And oh, by the way, Freddie Freeman has to face Jacob DeGrom, you know, opening day. So it's not an easy game. It's not easy to prepare for. But I'm confident these guys will. The adjustment period won't be long. They're ramping it up pretty hard and getting themselves ready pretty fast.
You mentioned Freddie Freeman, who has talked about and was just speaking this weekend about his battle with the coronavirus and some of the things he went through, very high fever, some of the symptoms that he dealt with. I'm curious what the reaction has been from other major league players, current players that you've talked to, hearing Freddie and his account of this.
Yeah, it's a scary thing, and it's something that, you know, you've heard some of the players kind of voice their opinions. I think Chris Bryant came out last week and really questioned how safe he felt. He felt like he would be somewhat safe in this environment, and he came out and said, you know, quite frankly, I don't, you know. So the struggle is real. You know, there's still questions on, you know, if a guy tests positive on the road, you know, does he quarantine in that city? Does he drive back home by himself? I mean, there's just so many questions. It's gonna happen. There are gonna be situations that arise during the course of this season where, you know, somebody is gonna have to miss some time. They're gonna be out there on the road. We just hope it's not one of the really key players for one of these contending teams, because 60 games is a sprint. It's not a marathon anymore. But hey, you know, everybody has to make adjustments, and you know, with this upcoming year, the players and the coaches are going to have to make adjustments. Us announcers are going to have to make adjustments. People putting pen to paper are going to have to make adjustments. So it's a free for all, folks.
Pretty wild. Chipper Jones now saying us announcers, 8-time All-Star, voted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2018, now calling games again for ESPN. We're very fortunate to have you doing that. So along those lines, because normally it's a marathon, 162, now it's a sprint 60. So what changes maybe from a manager's point of view, a player's point of view on how you normally would ramp up for a season and use the beginning of the season as opposed to now?
Well, I think you pay more attention to the nine guys that you're going to start every day here in spring training. You get them their necessary reps every single day, and then everybody else falls in line after that. You know, you got to pay attention, obviously, to your starting pitchers, make sure that they can go five or six innings by Thursday or Friday. That's probably the most important thing. Look, I think we're going to see some outstanding baseball here for this regular season stretch run, just because the rosters are expanded and you can ill afford to have a 3-4-5 game losing streak under this format, because that's a tenth of your season almost, you know? So managers, if a starting pitcher doesn't have it that day with them carrying 15, 16, maybe even 17 pitchers on their 30-man roster, if you don't have it in the first or second inning, that hook is going to be quick, and that manager is going to be trying to use every resource in that bullpen available to try and pull out a win.
Chipper Jones with us, our ESPN baseball analyst, brought to you by Blue Emu. Pharmacist recommended Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief. Works fast and you won't stink. One of the other differences, and you mentioned the KBO, we had seen games on there take place without fans, but you still had some of the cheering squads there. You had the cardboard cutouts in the stands. None of that last night for any of the MLB games, but I'm curious what you thought the response looked like from players getting used to playing without a crowd there.
Well, I can say this from personal experience. The baseball players are some of the lippiest and chirpiest guys that you ever want to meet. So I think the more piped in crowd noise, the better, because sure enough, if somebody throws one high and tight to a hitter, somebody over on the other side is going to say something. And if that pitcher can pinpoint whoever it is that's saying it, there's going to be some retribution. There's going to be some smack talk back and forth. I think the more noise that they can pipe in, the better. Obviously, there was a little bit last night at Wrigley Field. It was hard for me to tell on the feed that I had, but some of the people that were there that we interviewed said there was some crowd noise, and everything went off from a stadium standpoint without any snafus. So that was good. And but obviously, it's an exhibition game. Everybody's going to work out the kinks from the stadium. You know, the people running the stadium, to the players, obviously, to the guys in the booth. Last night, it's a new setup for us trying to run three guys on a setup and not step all over each other and try and keep the flow, you know, of conversation going. It's an adjustment.
It's preseason for everybody, no doubt about that. As Chipper Jones joins us, our ESPN baseball analyst and baseball Hall of Famer as well. So baseball, like football, is not doing it in a bubble. You'll be able to go home in your community and go back to the facility, except for the Toronto Blue Jays. They are, Canada's basically said, you can't come in and out. Teams can't, from the U.S., can't come in and out. You got to find somewhere else to play. So putting back your baseball cap back on as a player, you see some of the options. Their AAA affiliate in Buffalo or down in Florida where they do spring training. We know what's going on down there. What would you be looking for? And I'm sure management would be coming to you and saying, as some of the higher profile players, hey, what do you think about the situation? What would you be telling them?
Yeah, I'm curious as to the timing of this decision being so close to the regular season. It's got to be, you know, a little bit of a downer for the players. But most of those players on that Blue Jay team, they're so young and they just got out of AAA anyway. So, you know, going down to Buffalo probably wouldn't be all that bad of a gig. They're still playing Major League Baseball. I tell you this, I would not want to go to Dunedin, Florida. It's about 105 down there with about 1,000% humidity. It's going to take a lot out of those guys, to be honest with you. And that's an A-ball park. Granted, it is their spring training home, but that place only holds maybe 5,000 or 6,000 people. I mean, we're talking big league baseball here. I think the AAA facility, if they can do something to I'm hearing stuff about the lights and dugouts and, clubhouses and whatnot. Obviously, if they can do something to upgrade the facilities in a very short period of time, you know, getting back to this being a, you know, curious timing from the government in Toronto kind of shutting the Rogers Center down, then I would err on the side of going to Buffalo as opposed to Dunedin.
And they're definitely going to play. It's just a matter of where. The Blue Jays also threw out a third location that they've kept to themselves, but said there may be a possibility. But it does seem like Buffalo may be the way. Chip, I want to ask you this. Again, Hall of Fame, your number was retired by the Braves, an incredible career. I'm wondering, we were talking about baseball cards a little earlier, or cards of any sport. LeBron James just had a rookie card sold for $1.8 million. I'm just wondering, How much we getting for your rookie card? How much I got to pay to get one of yours?
It ain't $1.8 million. I can promise you that. I probably have thousands and thousands of my cards, and all of them, yeah, all of them together wouldn't even approach that. That is an amazing thing. But hey, we're talking about, you know, the greatest. If not the greatest, certainly the second greatest player that we've ever seen. And, man, that is astonishing. But it just goes to show you, you know, it's all supply and demand, and I'm sure that's a pretty tough card to get. And you're talking about one of the GOATs. So I don't put myself in that realm, but maybe I'll at least be able to put my seven kids through college with them. We'll see.
There you go. Yeah,
exactly. There we go. You can send them our way, and we'll do the selling for you. Yeah, we'll take exactly. our cut, and we'll get it all worked out for you. So, Chipper, we appreciate the time this morning. Looking forward to more from you and everybody else on our baseball crew as the sport continues to return.
Sounds good, guys. Y'all take it easy.
Thanks, Chipper. They had to be loving it last night. Again, even though they're doing it from different locations, I mean.
They showed the booth set up, too. It was very interesting. But like you said, just that familiarity
for all of us, a
summer night with baseball being back. It felt like a little slice of home there, which was good. And Aaron Judge home runs right off the bat,
you
too.
Kidding me?
I mean, yeah. And nothing says baseball's back like dingers from the biggest guy in the sport. So we'll continue to look forward to that. But we'll also head to the bubble. We'll get an update from the NBA's bubble at Disney from someone actually on campus now. We'll do that after this. Getting ready to resume play inside the bubble. We've focused so much on the rest of the world of sports, Major League Baseball, the NFL, as they try and hopefully get their sports back in a completely different environment. It's always good to be able to check back in on the NBA bubble whenever we get a chance. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch to Progressive can save on over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance.
So we're getting ready now. Obviously, the NBA and the bubble, you're hearing the stories about other fishing, golfing, setting up nets and playing paddleball and all that and kind of getting into their groove there. But games will start this week, like scrimmages.
Yeah,
will start this week.
Sort of the exhibitions like we saw from Major League Baseball.
Exactly,
last night.
Exactly. And I believe it's what next Tuesday is going to be, or next Wednesday or Thursday. Next week is going to be July 30th. Will be the start, the official restart of the season. Again, the 8 regular seasons to finish that up, and then going into the playoffs. See who we had a play in again for the 8th and 9th slot there as well. But we're getting there. We're getting to where I think players are going to feel most comfortable. It was the acclimation period at Disney World. Okay, these are the rules you have to follow. And players, I think, are pretty good at figuring out what they are, especially when you find out the penalties of a rule. You break a rule like a couple of guys inadvertently did, 10 days up to 10 days in quarantine. Once games start, that's going to cost you money because you're going to miss games and you're going to be fined for it as well. So really interesting where that's gone. It all seems to be moving pretty smoothly, though.
Yeah, I think people have settled into a rhythm. We've clearly seen the activities that are on that sort of extended campus, and we know that's the term that everyone loved using going into this, that we've seen people respond well to that, guys taking advantage of fishing, being able to do all those activities. But I think you're right. The scrimmages are the next biggest hurdle.
Yes.
And the one that involves, I don't know, the part of it that we know is a reality for all these sports. Eventually, you're going to come in contact with other people. This
right.
isn't like baseball where you're as naturally distanced. Basketball, while it's not a collision sport like football, is a contact sport. And you're going to have plenty of these guys coming in close proximity after spending all this time away from themselves on the court to try and prevent that.
I think what I will put their mind at ease is the fact that they are in the bubble and they know, or at least they believe, because they're testing so much, that the people they're playing against are all negative for COVID, right? So, I mean, that's the whole idea of this. Remember, by the time they got into the bubble or transitioning to the bubble, at one point there were 322 tests administered and only two players were positive. And that was before they got all the way into the bubble when they were quarantined. So this bubble right now seems to be working really well. We've got our people down there, Malik Andrews, Mark Spears, Rachel Nichols, all went through the quarantining, now are going inside the bubble. And I'll talk about that. The player, basically, listen, you have to buy into it, right? You know, you agreed upon this going in because there is a union. So you agreed upon this. So you had to get acclimated. You had to kind of find your footing a little bit. But now I think as a part, and I think, Mike, as we as former athletes understand, once you get to the athletic part of it, now we are kind of in our groove. You know, some of the exhibition games start. The next week, the real games start. And then you're kind of into your daily grind of, okay, this is what it's going to be going forward until we're either knocked out or we're crowned champion.
So we can talk about, you know, what we'd imagine it to be like, or we can go inside right now. We're fortunate to be joined by Mark Spears, our writer for the Undefeated, ESPN senior NBA writer, with us from the bubble. And so, Mark, we'll ask you, what has it been like now as you've had a chance to sort of get accustomed to your surroundings inside the NBA's bubble?
Freedom. you know what? It'll probably take me a couple of days to still figure it out. Now, we don't have a whole lot of real estate. We have a pool. We have a fitness center. And that's where we stop. I think that's about it. We got signs where we can only walk to a certain distance on the walking path because the Grand Destino, where all the big teams are staying, are. So we can only go but so far. So I'll figure it out more today. I still have to figure out where the food is now because I got a customer knocks on the door where they just dropped them off. But it's a whole new world, man. I get to go outside now. Just need to figure it all out.
So what do you know at this point, Mark, once the games start, even the exhibition games and then next week, what the access will be for those of you inside the bubble covering?
Well, let's look at just practice today. They only have a certain amount of spot at practice. Like, everybody can't go to Lakers practice. So they basically ask us, where do we want to go? And, you know, I'm kind of watching the teams that maybe have a star but perhaps don't have a name like the Lakers, where it's all filled, because the Lakers practice is going to be packed, but let's say, you know, Washington won't be, you know, so well, Portland may not be because maybe they're just not as popular for whatever reason. So, but every day we got to give them our list of who we want to see tomorrow, and I envision the same is going to take place for the games, which is going to be tough because, like, everybody can't go to every game. I think the seats are going to be social distance, which is part of the reason why there's not a ton of space. So they're certainly going to probably end up being some hurt feelings in the process because the lack of space for media seating. However, if you are at the game, man, we're talking about seats like I had when I first started covering the NBA in 99, close. 10, 15 feet away, I could see the players. Like, now it's like I'm in a rafters at Golden State when I'm at games. But now it's like when I first started coming to Nuggets, where I'm like almost courtside. So if you are there, these are going to be the best seats we've had in a long time.
Mark Spears with us again, senior NBA writer for us here, also at the Undefeated. And Mark, I guess to that extent, the access is going to be very different overall in this situation, so much of it, but you guys are quite literally living in the same environment as the players now for the first time, you know, really ever in this regard. So while you're still getting used to it, what's the response been like from the player side now, with a little more freedom certainly to roam on their side, but getting used to their new routine?
For us?
For the players. For the players, sorry. Anyway, what you've heard from the players so far about them getting used to their new routine now?
I think it might start getting a little bored because you can only go fishing so many times, right? You can only go on the water slide so many times. You've done everything by now. Now it's starting to kick in. Okay, my wife, my girl, my kids, they're not here. Actually, man, I was
starting to hear stories. And now I hear a lot more since we'll be able to go to practice. But, you know, I talked to a referee yesterday, and he just told me this heartbreaking story about how he drove to the airport. His wife dropped him off. And as soon as he got there, his, like, 8-year-old and six-year-old son just lost it. Dad, we don't want you to go, you know. And then he loses it, and his wife loses it. So, you know, I'm starting to hear some of those stories about how kind of heartbreaking the goodbyes are, because not only is it going to be a long departure, but, you know, families are worried about COVID, too. So, I'm sure now that I actually get to see the players and be around them, I get to hear more stories like that about how tough their departures are. And if they do make it to the second round, how excited they are to get their families here.
One story that has gotten some headlines down there is Zion Williamson had to leave the bubble for a family emergency. And we know first and foremost, we hope everything is okay there and that situation gets worked out. But then there's a thought of Zion, a star down there, trying to maybe get into that play-in with maybe a Memphis or somebody else at 8-9 slot to keep playing. Have you heard any more on Zion and when he may be back?
Man, the Pelicans, since the day they got Zion, have always kept things really close to the vest and treated him like the teenager he is, very, very cozy, very privately, and they're not letting anything out. I mean, if you ask Corin Alvin, he don't know nothing. Like, come on, just tell us you don't want to tell us, man. You don't have to tell us you don't know nothing. Like, stop. But, you know, there's very little room for error for the Pelicans if they want to be in the playoffs. I guess the good thing is they played 44 games without him. Brandon Ingram has started a lot of power forward. Nicolo Melli could start at power forward and keep Brandon Ingram, the all-star, at small. But with each passing day that Zion's not here, with each passing day that Russell Westbrook isn't here, like, although the Rockets are in the postseason, their seeding is still going to be affected over these 8 games. They're only like a game ahead of Dallas. So, you know, if they come out to shoot bad, and end up with the 7th seed, we could see a first-round matchup between, like, Houston and the Clippers, which would be crazy, you know. But so these games are important. I mean, it's important for all these teams to get their full complement of players. Harrison Barnes needs to get back for the Kings and Rashawn Holmes. And, you know, the teams that have the less problems, the teams that have people just committed and perhaps complaining the less are probably going to be the most successful.
You can follow his journey through the NBA bubble. I'm sure we'll hear plenty more from him on this situation as it unfolds.
Real quick, Mark, when we first talked to you, you were still in quarantine. You remembered to bring the wine, but you forgot a cord for your gaming station. Did you finally get that cord?
I did, and I'm going to admit to something. Uh-oh. And played Madden against Lisa Salter. She beat me so bad, bro. She and maybe she's around Monday Night Football and you know, all that football stuff. I'm used to playing hoop stuff. Man, she drugged me 33-7, man. I'm a little rusty in the game.
Wow. All right. Wow. Well, you know what?
So we're going to have a rematch with her tonight, but she beat me pretty bad. She had Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Drew Brees threw like 5 interceptions for me, so.
Wow.
But she beat me pretty bad.
I like how you phrased it as Drew Brees threw 5 interceptions for me, and I threw 5 interceptions with Drew Brees. My friend, understand how the game goes on here. Mark, we appreciate the time, man. Thanks, of luck, Mark, with everything with your newfound freedom now.
All right. Thanks, fellas. Pleasure.
I loved his story when he first got there. He remembered all his wine but forgot his gaming cord.
Yep, exactly. Priorities in the right space on that one, though, but – all things have come out positively on that regard. Mark Spears, writer for The Undefeated, updating us on life inside the NBA bubble. But coming up next, let's go to Life on the Links. What led one famous athlete to quote Hitch this weekend? We'll tell you that after this. It's Colt and Wingo here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Thanks to Mark Spears, who joined us from inside the NBA bubble just now on that very Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You know, I saw something this weekend that made me angry. There was some article, I forget where it was posted, but it was talking about Zac Efron.
Right.
and how for his latest Netflix show, he is sporting what they called a dad bod that shocked many people right. in all this one. That's literally like the picture that models take when they finally exhale after the shot. It had him side by side with his, I think it was his Baywatch body there.
Right.
It was obviously shredded to pieces. His dad bod body is basically no different from all this. It's
no.
a disgusting affront to those of us who have actually spent a lifetime building dad bods.
The bod I looked at was Andrew Brandt took another picture. He does triathlons. Dude, 60. Go search him out. Andrew Brandt, check him out. 60 years old, he was like in his bathing suit. Oh, my God. I'm 3 years away from that, and I need a lot of work to try and get to something like that. That was impressive.
Yeah, because you've helped cultivate an actual dad bod. I'm well on my way to that. Zac Efron, Andrew Brandt, not so much in this situation.
No.
Which brings us to our next friend. So,
the
this
dad
weekend,
bod.
Yeah, we had the Memorial Tournament this weekend. Again, Jon Rahm, ultimately your winner in this one here, ascends to the world number one in all this, which is great news, and certainly Tiger Woods being back out on the course was great news for a lot of people, but this was about Phil, again, capitalizing on the situation to probably market us something. I haven't figured out how yet, but Phil Mickelson on the 13th hole this weekend decided to putt from 78 yards out.
I couldn't believe he had the putter in his hand. I mean, 78 yards, you're talking almost 240 feet. You know, he's got a 12-foot putt. He's looking at a 22-foot putt. He's got a 3-foot putt. He's got a 240-foot putt coming, which did not go well.
No, it didn't go well. Actually, no, see, I will debate that because he still ended up making par on the hole.
Well, he did, but the putt didn't go well. I mean, to which led to his quote, right?
Listen. So in all of this, and this has become the best part about Phil,
yes.
is he's become golf's version of Tony Romo, where we found out during the match, expert commentator is going to walk us through all these elaborate things, and then pulled it off in that one. We remember that was one of the most important, impressive parts
yes.
of the match. This one, Phil goes putt from 78 yards out, full swing from 34 feet to get him able to par that one out. But right after the putt from 78 yards, we heard the quote. Saw that going a little bit differently in my head right there. Understandably so in that situation. And listen, for all of us that have gone out there and schlepped around a golf course for any amount of time, we've taken putts from certain extreme distances on there because those of us are less confident in the other parts of our game. Rarely do we expect to see that from someone in the master class like Phil.
Understand what Mike just said. He putted from 78 yards and putted it so poorly that he chipped his next shot. He didn't even putt and reach the green, so he chipped his next shot to basically save his par. It was
I think he deserves bonus points for being able to save par coming off that situation. And again, it was pointed out by one of our producers that I feel like we're not out of the woods yet on finding out that Phil was marketing something. I don't know if Phil had a new putter in the bag, a new wrap, something in there that he was trying to draw attention to. We need to stay woke to this kind of stuff because Phil Mickelson has become a marketing god in all of this one. By the way, we're obligated talking about golf to make sure we talk about Tiger
sure.
Woods. He talked after this about what it was like getting his feet wet again in a PGA event.
Well, I've competed and played again. It's been a while, and it was nice to get my feet wet and compete and play again, and tough conditions to start out my first week back, Thursday and Sunday, but it was good to get the feel and the flow of competing again.
So he went 71, then an awful 7. Remember we talked about that turnaround. He finished late Thursday, played early Friday, and the back was stiff on him, and it showed. He shot a 76. Saturday he looked a little more comfortable, shot another 71, and then yesterday shot a 76, though there was only one player that shot in the 60s, Matthew Fitzpatrick shot a 68, and that was it.
Yeah, brutal conditions
yes,
on
was.
Sunday there. So we've learned Tiger, the back is still going to take a while to be fully back in all this one. Phil Mickelson, the dad bod god, can't putt from 78 yards out. And Zac Efron, definitely still attractive. Coming up, why the NFLPA ran Engage 8 on Twitter. We'll get to that next on Golic and Wingo.